reading from the Gospels this morning. The first reading will be from the Gospels, Matthew chapter 20, beginning in verse 20. This is where Jesus is speaking to this subject. He's summarizing his whole life on earth. Why he left heaven, came to earth, was crucified, and so forth. Matthew 20, beginning in verse 20. Any of you like a book, please hold up your hands. The ushers will see that you get one. Matthew 20, beginning in verse 20. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons, and kneeling down, asked a favor of him. What is it you want? He asked. She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup I am going to drink? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now turn with me, please, to the reading from the epistles in 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 3. We have here a biographical description of one of the characters that we're going to be talking about out of the book of Esther. See if you can figure out which character it is. 2 Timothy chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to the parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Have nothing to do with them. They are the kind who worm their way into homes and gain control over weak-willed women, who are loaded down with sins and are swayed by all kinds of evil desires, always learning but never able to acknowledge the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so also these men oppose the truth. Men of depraved minds, who as far as the faith is concerned are rejected, but they will not get very far, because as in the case of those men, their folly will be clear to everyone. Now turn with me, please, to the reading from the Old Testament, from the book of Esther. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Job, Psalms, Proverbs. Esther. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 5. Last week we did an overview of the book of Ezra. Now this week it's an overview, really, of the book of Esther. Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse 5. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive with Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. This girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features. And Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favor. Immediately he provided her with her beauty treatments and special food. He assigned to her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Every day, he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was, what was happening to her. Before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there, and in the morning, return to another part of the harem to the care of Sheshgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. When the turn came for Esther, the girl Mordecai had adopted, the daughter of his uncle, Abihail, to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the harem, suggested. And Esther won the favor of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his nobles and officials. He proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. When the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. You may want to keep your finger in that place, because we'll be referring back to the book of Esther from time to time. The 2 verses that I'd like to call your attention to for just a moment are verse 20 there in chapter 2. Esther had kept the secret of her family background, nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. And then, if you look on over there in chapter 4, verse 16, you find sort of the high water mark and the crucial point in Esther's life, where in chapter 4, verse 16, he had asked her to go in before the king, and anybody goes in unbidden before that king, and he was killed. And after what had happened to Vashti, there was a particular danger for her to do that. But Mordecai asked Esther to do that. And so in verse 16 of chapter 4, she said, I will go to the king to intercede for my people as you tell me to do. And if I perish, I perish. Now last week, we were learning about the slave boy, Ezra, born in captivity in Babylon, priest, didn't have any opportunity to priestify or to make any sacrifices, no altar and no temple down there in Babylon. But he was born in captivity in Babylon, but he became the world's greatest scholar and teacher of God's word. He became a priest, a governor in Jerusalem. And how God built purpose into Ezra's life. Overwhelming, all-consuming purpose. Far more important than his own life ever could be. We were thinking together about the whole book of Ezra. Now today, this week, we're learning from a little orphan girl who became the queen of the great emperor Xerxes, and how God built into her life such a tremendous desire to make other people successful, that she was so attractive to everyone that she met. I shouldn't say anything about the application until we get clear to the end. But I want to tell you a little bit about what's coming so that you can watch for it as we go along. And part of the reason for that is because of a very interesting experience Margie and I had yesterday evening. Smith family, the Charles Smith family, Dr. Charles Smith family, were having a reunion or an anniversary. 45 years they've been married. And so they'd invited in, and people came in from all over the world. And the children emceed the thing. But one of the little things that they did as we walked in the door there, they gave us a little piece of paper and said, we'd like to know what the total is of the numbers of years served in mission. Directly, these were people who had been ministered to by the Smiths in one way or another. And so they asked each one of us to write down on the page how many years we've been in ministry. And we did, and they totaled that before the end of the evening, and it was over 1,000 years. The two physicians who had gone out into the mission field directly. See, Charles and Lee wanted to go out to be medical missionaries. But because of a health problem, he was not allowed to go. No mission board would accept him. She had another health problem. No mission board would accept them. And so he said, all right, I'll stay here in this country. And one of the missionaries who'd been on the field for I don't know how many, many, many years, and there was a lot of old people there, as old as they are. And one of them told about how he had been driving up to Kokomo, where Charles is radiologist yet today of the Kokomo Howard Community Hospital there, and how Charles had said to him, I want to make just as much money as I legitimately can. He said, that sounded like an American. But then he said, Charles added something else. In order that I can give just as much money as I possibly can, to missions for the rest of my life. And he had learned this same secret that God is teaching Esther about the joy and the accomplishment of helping other people to become successful. Many of you probably know or may not know that Charles and Lee provided the house for Roy and Margie and our family to live in when we first came to Indianapolis in 1963. We lived in their house all through the grade school and high school years of our children and on through their college years. And they would not allow us to pay any rent or to do anything else. They provided that. And now we were hearing from people last night. Literally thousands of lives had been touched and moved by that desire from that family. Most of you don't even know them, but you need to know that about them. They had a real impact here. And this girl that God's teaching us about here has learned the same thing, excitement about making someone else successful. Xerxes was the emperor of all the Medes and Persians, with an empire that reached from India all the way out through Syria and Lebanon, all of Israel, down around the Mediterranean Sea, across Egypt to Kush, And then there was one country that he still didn't own and that had held out, and that was Greece. That was Greece. And he went after Greece with a vengeance. He assembled a navy that had never been seen before, thousands of ships. And he became very angry at one time at the sea because it had a storm. He was a little bit eccentric too. And he tried to chain up that part of the sea. He had actual chains made, and they tried to chain it. Well, he was a little bit eccentric. But the fact is that he won the war with Greece. He conquered Greece. And Greece had never been conquered before. And then he threw a banquet. And that was some banquet. It lasted 180 days. And he had people from all 127 of his provinces, all through India and from Greece now, and from Egypt and from all these other countries. He divided all the known world. There wasn't anything else worth conquering. He had done it all. And there wasn't. And so he had invited the princes from all these 127 provinces in there and had this feast that went on for 180 days. Now, his queen at that time was a girl named Vashti, and she was very beautiful. And he had shown them the evidences of his power and of his wealth and of everything that he had. And he was so proud of everything that he had. But someone apparently along the line said, but you haven't shown us yet the most beautiful thing that you own. You haven't shown us your queen. And so he called for Vashti. And the King James and some of the other translations are very kind, very modest at that point, where they say that she was to come in without her veil. But the Targum of Esther that the Jews have point out that she was to come in disrobed, so that all the men who'd been drinking for a week at the end of this feast could see the beauty of his queen. And she was confronted with a decision, and she couldn't think up a creative alternative, and so she simply refused and was deposed because of that. And that's the point at which then they had to find another queen. The king called them in and said, what shall we do? And it's very interesting because the prince of the princes was a man by the name of Memucan. And his name literally means Mr. Milktoast. And so he came up with a federal law that required all wives henceforth all over the entire kingdom of the Medes and Persians must by federal law obey their husbands. I think he needed a little reinforcement in his own family. That's why he was called Memucan. But they did that. Then they also looked for another queen. And Esther, the little orphan girl, who became the world's most powerful queen. And lest you miss it, in the last part of the book of Esther, she is writing the decrees of that king for him. She became a political power, a powerful person in that great kingdom. Children, there are just three subjects this morning. And for those of you who don't know, the children draw pictures while I'm preaching, and they can summarize the whole message in what I'm saying. And so that's why I'm giving some instructions now. There are just three subjects this morning. Esther, the little orphan girl who became the world's most powerful queen because she was so excited about making other people successful. Haman, the man who tried to make himself successful. And three, God's plan for building into your life anything that's necessary for you to be a queen or a king today.
We don't know how Esther became a queen, going back to that first subject now, how she became an orphan, I mean. Probably when King Nebuchadnezzar captured Jerusalem, we're told that it was then that her parents were taken into captivity and that they died. The Hebrew word is not clear. They were killed. Probably he killed her daddy and mother. And she was just a little girl, alone, all by herself in the world. But her mother's brother picked her up, Mordecai, and he adopted her. And they lived in Susa, that Shushan. That was King Artaxerxes' summer palace. And the Bible tells us that she was a very beautiful girl. And her uncle, Mordecai, was a very unusual man. In fact, in the last verse of this book, you find that he became the number two man right after Xerxes in this entire kingdom. A Jew? Yes. Very similar to Daniel. Sometimes has been called the second Daniel. Mordecai was an unusual man. And you know why he was unusual? Because Mordecai was so excited about making other people successful. Now you begin getting the picture about how it was that Esther's parents became so excited about making other people successful. As I listened to Charles Smith's three children last night, they have that same excitement about making other people successful. Is that true of you? Husbands, are you that excited about making your wife successful? Wives, are you that excited about making your husband successful? Children, are you really excited about making your father and mother successful as your parents? Employers, are you really excited about making your employees successful? And employees, how excited are you about making your employer successful? Elders, how excited are we about making every person in this congregation successful in whatever capacity God calls them to? And how excited are you as church members about making us successful in carrying out our responsibilities as elders? This was the thing that characterizes Mordecai's life. And he found ways, as we're going to see, of building this into the life of Esther. And that's the key to every bit of her success as the orphan girl becomes the queen, a powerful political influence in the whole empire. In chapter 2 and verse 21, there's a little story that's tucked in there about how Mordecai overheard a plot that was being laid by two of King Xerxes' men to assassinate King Xerxes. Bigthana and Teresh were plotting to kill the emperor. Mordecai heard about that. And that was after Esther had been made queen, and so he simply got to her and he said, hey, you better get to him and tell him that they're going to kill him. And so she did. And his life was saved because of that. Mordecai was wanting to see other people successful. Later on, Mordecai discovered the plot, the plan, to kill every Jew that was alive in that whole empire. He found out, and he was so excited about making them successful, in this case that they would just live, that he found a way of communicating that to the king, and he involved Esther in that. And she became involved, and that's why we have Jews today, why they weren't all killed. The last verse in the book tells how Xerxes discovered in Mordecai this character quality of making other people successful, and he promoted him so that, I'm quoting, Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, held in high esteem by his fellow Jews because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews. That's the last chapter, the last verse in the whole book. So it was really Mordecai who showed Esther how to be excited about making other people successful. And that's the story of his whole life. And that's God's way of teaching Esther. That's God's way of teaching any boy or any girl. What God is doing in the lives of Mordecai and Esther has been demonstrated in the life of Jesus Christ. How's the Old Testament related to the New Testament? Listen now to the words of Christ as Christ summarizes, or as it summarized his whole life. Whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, Jesus said. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. See how this Old Testament record here is demonstrating the policy and the principle that Christ laid down there. That's a brief summary of Christ's whole life, his reason for leaving heaven to come to earth. But two men stood in the way of Esther's becoming queen and of the Jews living. Two men who were the exact opposite of all this. Two men who had one end and aim in life, and that was to promote themselves, to serve themselves. The first of these was King Xerxes himself, and he was seven devils wrapped into one. There's seldom been a more evil man. And I've already told you a little bit about his life, about the depth of his depravity, but his cruelty, his brutality was a thing that was horrible to see and to know about. And it's written up in the other histories outside Scripture. It's very plain that he was a brutal, cruel man. And then Mordecai was, if anything, even more proud than the king. These two men were everything that God is describing and condemning in 2 Timothy 3. Xerxes was brilliant, but he was eccentric. I've told you a little bit already about how he had conquered all these other countries and the occasion, the situation when he held this feast in which he invited Vashti in after he had defeated Greece. But just at this juncture where Esther becomes queen, Haman enters the picture. Now, Haman was a very wealthy man, and the king gave to Haman his signet ring to make him the number two man in his kingdom. We've all known men like Haman. The first word that appears there in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 9, he's very self-centered. He required everyone to bow down, to kneel to him wherever he went. And everyone did. He was able to enforce that, except this guy, Mordecai, the Jew. He would not kneel. I'm not sure why Mordecai would not kneel. Perhaps he recognized in Haman that there was a falseness there and a wrongness there, and that it would be more harmful to Haman if he kneeled to him than if he didn't. But he would not kneel to Haman. Everybody else did, but Mordecai would not. And Haman was enraged and discovered that Mordecai was a Jew. And so he was determined to kill every Jew that lived because of that. Second feature of Haman's character, and you can follow these there if you want, in 2 Timothy 3, is that he was very greedy for money. He was wealthy, but he was always after more. And a third feature of Haman's character there was that he was boastful. He went home after a banquet with the queen and got together all his wife and friends and impressed upon them how he called together his wife and friends and boasted to them, it says there in chapter 5, verse 7, about his vast wealth, his many sons. He had 10 sons, and all the ways that the king had honored him. And then he added it off to say, and the queen has also invited me as the only other person into this banquet. He's proud. At that point where the king suddenly, in the midst of all this, for some unknown reason, some amazing reason, King Xerxes couldn't sleep one night. And so he says, bring me the court records that I can review my records, my minutes from what's been going on for the last year or so. And he reads in there suddenly about how this man Mordecai had told him about these two who were plotting against him, and how instead of being assassinated, he was rescued. And the king suddenly comes to light on that, and he said, did we ever do anything for that man Mordecai? And his servant said, no, he wasn't even recognized. He said, he has to be recognized right now. Who's in the court? Who are the princes in the court? They said, well, Haman is here. King says, bring him here. He says, Haman, what could we do that would really honor someone who's done a very great service to me? Well, Haman could think of only one person who would fit that position. And so he really laid it on. He said, King, what you need to do is bring one of your own royal robes and bring one of your own royal horses, the ones that have the little star on top of them, and you put the man on that horse, and then you have one of your most royal princes, the most royal prince you can think of, aside from him, of course, through the streets, and you say, this is the man who's to be honored. Xerxes says, that sounds like an excellent idea. Now you do it. You're the best prince I can think of. You've thought it up, you do it. And by the way, put Mordecai on the horse, because he's the one that we want to honor. Well, I don't know how he shouted it as he went through the streets, but he got the job done, and then he went home and cried. He was so grieved and enraged that the man that he had planned to execute the next day, and he had a gallows built 75 feet high to hang this fellow on, and here he was having to lead this fellow through the streets and say he's the greatest. And he went home after that experience, and you'd think that he'd been humbled. And he was grieved, but he still wasn't humbled. He was contemptuous of the Jews. By this time, he realized that Mordecai must be a good man. But he was contemptuous of their goodness. The kind of person we're talking about that you know, you've seen these people, is contemptuous of anyone who's that good. And he's rebellious, and he's ungrateful. He never does thank anybody for anything as you look through here. Not really. He just keeps on wanting something more. And the eighth word that you look down through there in 2 Timothy is he's profane. He swore that he would kill Haman, that he would kill Mordecai and every Jew that lived. And he's insensible. The queen was pleading for herself, for her own life, and for the lives of her people, and he just would not listen. He was insensitive. And he's incompatible. His wife and his friends said to him, hey, If you are opposing Mordecai and the Jews, you better quit it, because God won't let you get out of this. But he would not listen to that counsel. He was incompatible. This kind of person that you know, you've met this kind of person, is that way, will not listen to someone who wants to make peace. And then in chapter 6 and on down there, he's the false accuser in chapter 3. He told Xerxes lies about the Jews. He said, you know, Xerxes, these Jews do not obey the king's laws, and it is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. That was exactly wrong. It was in the king's best interest to tolerate them. It was not true that they were breaking the king's laws except when he had the wrong laws made. And then he's without self-control. He goes home and he cries in anger and bitterness when Mordecai is honored. And he's vicious towards authority. He's going to have them all killed. And he's a despiser of good. He hated godliness. And he's disloyal and he's reckless. When the story comes out, and the queen says, she says to the king, well, if you, he says finally, what do you want me to do? What can I do? He doesn't know anything about the problem yet. But he says, what do you want me to do? And the queen says, well, I'm just pleading for my life. For your life? Yeah. You've ordered me to be killed. I'm just pleading. If you just ordered me to become a slave, that'd have been different. We could have done that. But you've ordered me to be killed. He says, how did this happen? And she said, it's that man right there. His name is Haman. The king is so caught up in his anger at that point, in his confusion about things, he goes out to clear his mind. And while he's out there, Haman falls on the queen's couch, and the king comes in to see that. He's a reckless man. And the king says, cover his face. He's had it. He dies just as soon as he can die. when a man's face was covered, it meant that he would die. And so they took him out, and they couldn't find any more convenient gallows, so they hanged him on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. We've known people like this. It's acted out, and that's not acting. That's the record. That's history. That's historical record. We've known people who are like this, the exact opposite of Mordecai and Esther, who were excited about making other people successful. These men were excited about making themselves successful, no matter what it costs anyone else. They are exact opposite, and God put them together in the same book so that we can see the shocking contrast. Now, there are 10 lessons that I want you to see. Things that Mordecai built into the life of Queen Esther. Things that caused her to become so excited about making other people successful. And my time's up this morning. But same time, same place next week. And we're going to go on. Because children, I want you to be so much excited about making your parents successful. Wives, to be so excited about making your husband successful. And husbands, to be so excited about making your wife successful. And the elders are excited about making you successful into whatever calling God has sent you. The deacons, likewise, are excited about making you successful. But I wanted to analyze some of these details of how it is that a person can be successful, and so successful that God sees to it that they come into the position of being queen. Now, there are a couple of you who may not be here next week, but we do have tapes, and you could secure them that way. Let's bow our hearts in prayer. Heaven.